This is Jessica Keene reporting for KHOE World Radio here at Maharshi University of Management, today in Vedic City in Headley Hall, the new home for the David Lynch Masters in Filmmaking. And here with me today is award-winning documentary filmmaker and producer Lee Badgley. And she's based in Vancouver, British Columbia. She's a global citizen, has traveled all over the world creating cultural and inspiring documentaries about humanitarians and change makers. Some of her many credits include The Dolphin Dealer, Greenpeace, Making a Stand, TV series including Ice Pilots. She has her master's in business administration from York University in my hometown, Toronto. And she actually spent a few years here in Fairfield and at MUM studying the science of creative intelligence. She is a certified teacher of transcendental meditation, so a governor of the Age of Enlightenment. And this community is always so delighted when she comes back for a visit. So welcome to the show. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Jessica. It's wonderful to be here, as always.
And this time you're here for a 3-day workshop for the David Lynch MA, and this is on camera interviewing techniques.
Yes, it's a workshop on conducting on-camera interviews, mm-hmm. primarily for documentaries and factual programs.
Uh-huh. And I actually was very lucky to be there for the first day of the workshop, and I was feeling very inspired through the process. I've told you about this just now. But I found out it wasn't only me. There are other students who are similarly inspired. And one student said, "Now here's someone who's speaking my language."
Oh, great.
And it was as if all the natural documentary filmmakers in the class sort of woke up. It seemed like you were tapping into this area, this genre of filmmaking that speaks to them. And I wondered, for you, when did you know that documentary was a powerful tool to communicate your voice and to communicate the voices of others?
Well, I was actually living in Fairfield at the time and came to realize that I wanted to make films because, for me, the combination of moving images and the spoken word and music are very, very powerful. They can have a strongly visceral effect on who's ever watching. And I've always really cared about people and what's going on in the world. And I just felt that if I didn't spend my life trying to make a difference in whatever way, small, large, whatever I could do, then it would be a wasted life. So for me, it's extremely important to work on messages, high profile change makers, just trying to make a small difference while I'm here.
It's beautiful. And you described in your workshop the interview process itself as like a psychology session. I thought this was fascinating. Why? What's the similarity?
Well, I think to do a good interview with someone, you have to really understand human nature. So to understand human nature, the primary subject is always yourself. So the more you come to know yourself and the more you grow in consciousness, I think the greater your ability to be empathic and to put yourself in someone else's shoes. Because when you're interviewing someone, your job is first to do your research on them so that the questions you ask are appropriate, but also to gain their trust so they open up to you. Because it's very easy to just quickly slide in, interview with someone and get a really superficial answer to your question. Because people are polished, people today are much more media savvy than they used to be. They're willing to talk. But if you don't really get them to open up and tap into their heart value, which Maharshi says the feeling level is much more powerful than the thinking level, the gross level of thinking that we use most of the time, that's where the real truths come. The closer you can get to their field of intelligence, pure consciousness, the more authentic their answers will be, and therefore much more potential for creating change. Mm. So when I mentioned to the students that you have to be somewhat of a psychologist, often you have to do all this that I'm describing about in a matter of seconds, because you may have never met the person before. They don't know anything about you. They don't know if they can trust you. Perhaps you're there as they think that you're there as an investigative journalist trying to get the dirt on them to make a negative portrayal. So you really need to assure them with words, with projecting your heart, your being, that you are there to support them in their work. So that has to take place often really quickly. Not always. Some people have the luxury of knowing their subjects and interacting with them well before you go to camera. But often it's that second. So it's really important to be very, very flexible emotionally and mentally and intellectually when you're interviewing.
That's very fascinating. And it kind of reminds me of how we describe transcendental consciousness itself as being a state of restful alertness. You know, you describe being sort of composed and quiet and big-hearted and open, but at the same time very alert. You were describing how you have to sort of be giving cues to your director of photography, or be flexible also to move in a direction or that they might want to go in, or that you have these funders that are, you know, are funding your film and you want to stick to your story as well. So, and all of this allows for them to then give up secrets or to express something that maybe they weren't ready to come and express that day. Is the parallel a true one?
Would you say? Definitely. I mean, I think my interviewing skills have increased, have improved over the years as I, my own personal consciousness expands with my practice of TM. So definitely, I know one point Maharishi always used to talk about is with meditation you can move really easily, much more fluidly from point value to infinity and back. And I think it's really important, that skill in interviewing, because you're sitting there across from someone who's never met you. There's a camera, there's lights blaring in their face, hopefully not blaring, you don't want to overexpose them, but you know, it can seem like they're being interrogated. So you have to sit there centered and calm, but you also have to let go of the small self, because it's really, what's going on is much bigger than you are. So you're inviting them into your world and you're letting them invite you into theirs. You're really sharing some intimate information that they hopefully will divulge. So while you're interviewing, you have to be able to be, your mind has to be razor, razor sharp, listening to what they're saying, anticipating how they might answer your question, intuiting what they really want to talk about if it's off topic, where their mind really is tending to go or wants to go. You have to be aware of all that, because there could be hidden gems in questions you haven't even thought of. So your mind has to be razor sharp and able to follow their thinking process and their feeling process, because they may not even be aware what they want to talk about. So you have to be able to do all that with one level of your mind. At the same time, you have to evaluate the questions as your, the answers rather, as they're coming, and you have to say, can this be edited? Is this answer appropriate, good enough for us to work with in the edit suite? Because if not, you have to do it again, come at it differently, guide them to re-answer it in a way that will be able to be used when you're creating the piece, when you're editing it. So you have to be able, your mind has to keep the big picture in mind of the vision of the story. Plus, is it usable film-wise? Plus, where is this person going on a thinking and feeling level? And you have to do all that while at the same time operating from your heart, so that they are really right there with you. It's one of the circumstances where I'm required to be more present, really completely present in the moment than almost anything else I do. So I always liken it to being, your mind has to be razor, razor sharp while your being is completely fluid and open and soft and warm. So it really uses all aspects of your being. That's where you really come alive and really connect with another person. So I think it, for me, it definitely is, translates to exactly how Maharishi describes transcendental consciousness, using all those beautiful qualities from the absolute and bringing them to bear right during the interview. It's beautiful.
I would love to be interviewed by you one day. I imagine it would also be a very blissful experience for the interviewee.
I think we'd laugh a lot. Laughing is very important.
On Wednesday, you were talking about the first iteration. That is the first time someone gives an answer on a specific subject, some aspect of their story. And you were saying that that's the point when it's the most fresh, it's the most potent with energy and emotion. Why is that in your experience?
I think they're at that moment when, if you've gained their trust and they're feeling comfortable, the interviewer is, their job is to get the interview subject relaxed to the point where they forget the camera's there. And it's really difficult when there's all these lights blazing and crew in the room and so on. But really, if you're good, you can make them forget that anybody else is there.
Hmm.
It's just, you create that really intimate, cozy rapport between the two of you so that they are willing to be open. And I think that moment when you ask a question for the first time, it's like the bubble rises up from the surface of their field of creative intelligence and it bursts, filled with integrity and freshness and innocence. And that's why you've got to be really skilled in waiting for it, recognizing it, and then working with that, because often they're giving you an entree into a world that at some level they really, really want to share with you or with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're sitting there, but they don't know how, they don't really know, and they're in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a delicate balance of sort of prompting them and letting them go where nature is guiding them. So the freshness is there at the beginning a lot of times. Probably not the first couple of questions. Those you just use at warm-ups. But when you're really ready to start asking the deep questions or the ones that you've set out to get, that's when you really have to be still. I often lower my voice so they feel safe. And I try to make it feel warm so they feel comfortable and they're not threatened. So if they feel relaxed, you know, Marcy talks about when we meditate, we feel sometimes like we're in a warm bath. And I think if I can help create that atmosphere in an interview, they're much more likely to share that finest level of feeling with you. And that's where the gold lies.
I don't imagine that there are many filmmakers that would describe interviewing in the way you just have. And one of the most beautiful expressions I heard you say was that interviewing is like falling in love. And it made me think of a couple things. One, in physics, there's this phenomenon where the observer affects the observed. So those latent and potential qualities of the interviewee, of the object, get enlivened through your own observation, just like falling in love. And I wanted to read this quote by Maharshi. He said, "It is the refined vision of love that doesn't mind the surface crudeness. It only appreciates, appreciates, appreciates. Lack of love will even put in more crudeness, and love will just wash off all crudeness. Some subtle will come up, some good will come up. So this tenderness of perception enables one to appreciate more tender values of life." And I just wondered if you could comment on how do you notice that this power of love, this power of attention that you bestow upon the people in your surroundings as a filmmaker, whether in an interview or in some other production setup, how does that work in terms of making better film?
For me, I think, it's wonderful, that quote from Arishi. I think that love is everything. I mean, he's always saying that, you know, his book, Love and God, is just the most wonderful gem there is to understand ourselves, our relationship with God and with each other. And I think if we come to know, realize, and fully ingest and appreciate the knowingness that there is no separation between any of us, between any of us and the divine, between any of us and the planet, the environment, then I think if you bring that knowingness to, we're talking about interviewing, so if you bring that knowingness to an interview situation, I think the person sitting across from you picks up on some level that you are fully there for them. and fully appreciate who they are, even if you don't always understand at first where they're coming from on an issue. They trust. There's some part of them that knows they can trust you. And I think for me, that's my job, because I want them to know I really do fall in love with them because we're not separate. Mm-hmm. They're part of me, I'm part of them, we're part of the divine, we're part of creation. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate who they are. Mm-hmm. I think they pick up on that, so they're often ready to reveal the most intimate parts of them. And I have this reputation of being able to make pretty much almost anyone cry on camera. It sounds like a bad thing. It sounds like I'm trying to exploit them, but it's not true. I think that in the most secret and cherished chambers of our hearts, everybody, that's the part of us we are so desperate, so inclined and wanting to share with another person and with other people. And because the world is so fast-paced and often harsh, most of us are pretty guarded. Mm. And we keep that little treasure chest closed. Mm. But if I go and I'm talking to some of these global change makers whose work I admire just over, in an over-the-top, all-out way, they know that I am absolutely in love with them that moment and appreciate. So that little treasure chest, that lid cracks open a bit. And the more we're there, floating around in that warm bath together, the more they're willing to open. And I think that with those kind of answers that they give, that kind of knowledge, that feeling that comes from their world and goes into the hearts of the viewers when they're watching a film, that's where the real magic lies. Real change can happen when people are sharing that way. Mm. So I think it's all about authenticity and integrity. Mm-hmm. And I think if you really, really respect and appreciate and love the person you're sitting across from, they know it. Right. And they feel safe enough. I had a very senior filmmaker from New York tell me once, a documentary filmmaker, people are much more inclined to reveal their secret to you than keep it inside, because we are a social species. Mm-hmm. We want to share things with each other. We have a limited time on earth that we remember, and we want someone to know who we are. Right. And if that can be sometimes through speaking your message on a film, they really want to do that, but they've got to know they're in safe hands. And I try to assure people that with me, that's my word. Mm. You know, that yes, I will honor you. Mm.
That's so beautiful, and it seems to speak to this idea that connection and social behavior is reciprocal, which is just a common sense kind of thing. Oprah, she gave this talk to the Harvard graduating class this past spring, and one of the parts of her talk was how in every interview at the end, you know, when the cameras had stopped and the, you know, the equipment started to move away, they'd come to her and they'd say, "Was that okay?" Has that been your experience too? Do people ask for you to confirm, "Did you hear me? Was that okay?"
Absolutely. What I do is an interview usually lasts between 1 hour, an hour and 45 minutes, depending on how much stamina or time the person has, because it's an intense sharing of hearts and intellects. So going beyond that, they get exhausted. So I will very often during the interview, because clearly they can be edited and they never hear my voice in the final film, they'll look at me with those eyes of, "Am I doing okay?" And some of these are seasoned people.
Right.
Okay, not all of them. Some of them are very sure of themselves. But some of them, we all have insecurities. And my God, to expose yourself on cameras, really, it's huge. So I often say, "You're doing a great job. This is great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful." And then I'll keep talking, and every few questions, "Great stuff." You know, I just give them a little encouragement along the way because that gives them some confidence to keep going. So I think Oprah's comments were very, yes, definitely that happens. And even at the end, like she says, at the end when the cameras are off and we're parting, I say, thank you, you did an amazing job. I really, really appreciate you.
Yeah.
So they go away with a good feeling.
Mm.
And I go away really feeling so blessed and lucky.
Well, I wanted to ask one last question because I know your time is short and we so appreciate you spending this little time with me today. Since this is the David Lynch Masters in Film, and he wrote this book called Catching the Big Fish, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Love the book. I love it. I love David.
And students are really learning this. They're experiencing this on both levels, experiencing the deepest levels of their own consciousness, the depths of the ocean, but also learning how to find that idea, that spark, that story. And in your work, I'm just wondering, how do you know when an idea is a really good one, that it has potential, that it's, you know, a big fish?
That's a great question. First of all, I do think that with our practice, with our TM practice, it really helps us heighten our awareness and appreciate things as they come to us. And we learn, hopefully, to be still and let things come to us. Mm-hmm. We're learning to manifest things. And Maharshi always encourages us to know that less is more. So if we try to hold back and not sort of go out and scramble to find the ideas, but more draw them to us.
Uh-huh.
And that really works. I mean, notwithstanding, you're out there in the world and my antenna are always open. I'm listening, sometimes eavesdropping in restaurants. I mean, I've literally gone up and told someone, I just couldn't help but overhear your story.
Wow.
You know, I'm interested in making a film about it. So it has worked. But literally drawing ideas and events and situations to us that provide these ideas. But I think to answer your question about how do you know it's a big idea, for me, I get approached all the time or I hear ideas all the time when I lose sleep because of it.
Hmm.
When a story grabs me by the throat or the heart and says, listen to me. You can't go on until you've told me. Until I become not consumed, but not overwhelmed, but until I become involved or dive into it, when it begs me to just know more.
Mm.
And when it touches my heart and I go, yeah, in quietness, I go, okay. I really think the story chooses the filmmaker. So I think there's a divine coming together of the right parties if everything is met, you know, if those conditions are met. So I think being still and quiet and knowing that the real things are going to come to you, those are the big fish when they just won't leave, when they won't let you alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Is there some sense that we choose things or we choose stories because they're telling our own story?
Oh.
You know, consciousness being the self-referral reality, are we choosing things that speak our own song?
Absolutely. I mean, we're always growing as human beings and evolving spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the events in our lives are just a mirror of what's going on inside of us. So absolutely, the things that come to us are a reflection of who we are at the moment and or what we need to learn.
Oh.
And I had an experience making a film about Greenpeace. Basically, it started because I heard Maharshi saying this one phrase in a course, and I think the course was called Total Knowledge. And he said, anything. And when I say anything, I mean anything is possible.
Mm.
Of course, he said that in his charming Indian accent. And it just stuck with me, and I knew I had to find an idea to illustrate that principle, and it eventually, long story short, it became a film about Greenpeace, which started in Vancouver, and in the early days, they didn't know what they were doing. It was often a group of sort of raggle-tag hippie guys that were just trying to do something good, and the miracles that happened for them, inexplicable, illogical, unbelievable things, clearly illustrated that anything is possible for me. And it was all about trust. They knew what they wanted to accomplish, and they trusted that the universe was going to step in and support them. Mm-hmm. That was their walk and talk. I mean, it was just incredible. So I wanted to make a film about it, but in documentary filmmaking, you never know what's going to happen. It's real life. You have no control over it. So I basically jumped in that river, not knowing where it was going, and had to learn for real the trust that, yes, the message I was actually trying to get across or illustrate is real, that anything is possible. And the ending of the film blew even my own mind away. I had no idea that was going to happen. It was just, it was a real life learning lesson for me during the process of making, and I needed to learn it then.
Wow.
So it's just the outside events in your life clearly match what's going on inside.
I think we're all going to want to go and see this after we've listened to this show. One further thing, speaking of people trying to create good, in this community, you know, for many years, and it's really the raison d'être for all of Fairfield and MUM, is that we want to establish this group, this permanent group of peace-creating experts. And I'm just wondering, how does that connect with your experience? Have you ever been part of a group that's being coherence creating? I think you mentioned Dubrovnik.
Yes. Yeah. During the Kosovo crisis in 1999, Marushi called for as many people as possible to go to over there to sit in large groups and practice the TM City program. And I just was at a place where I just needed and wanted to go. So I left. There were three delegates from Vancouver, where I'm from and where I live. And I planned to go for 3 weeks. And the other two delegates from Vancouver were already there, so they came to the airport to collect me. And between looking at their shining faces and the beautiful scenery where the course was situated, I just blurted out, "I have an announcement to make. I'm not going back. I'm staying here." And I haven't even reached the course yet. And our job was to meditate all day long, you know, in the appropriate way. And there were locals there who would come up to us. They had no idea we would be closed in these halls, you know, meditating all day, coming out for meals and some walk and talks. And they said, "Look, we don't know what you're doing inside there, but whatever it is, please keep doing it, because we all feel so good right now." And then we know that there was a pretty fairly quick conclusion to that crisis. So I don't have any doubt that we had an effect. And when Marshy would call the course, it was just blissful, just incredible. So really it illustrated the point for me that it's only consciousness that is infinite power. Nothing else, not force, not might, not armies, not money, not anything. Only consciousness has infinite power.
Would this make for a film, do you think, on the Maharshi effect? How would you illustrate this invisible field effect of consciousness? Any ideas off the top of your head?
I have to go fishing for that one.
Okay. Very good.
Hopefully we'll catch the big one.
And it just indulge me in a Canadian question, since I'm with a fellow Canadian. You've traveled all over the world. You've enjoyed so much cultural variety and diversity, and yet you still call Vancouver home. Why
yes,
is that?
Yes. I'm Canadian. You know, I actually have, I'm a citizen of other countries as well. I am a global citizen. I think in my heart, I totally identify as Canadian. I think there are qualities in our culture that are very sattvic. We're not a world power the same way the U.S. is. We're not really great entrepreneurs like the U.S. We sit, one of our prime ministers, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, called America, we're the sleeping giant, like we're just up against a huge, huge world power. But it's not in our nature to be imperialistic. We're very welcoming. We're very humble and shy. Perhaps too self-deprecating. But I think it's very heartful. And I just feel good about it. The West Coast for me is I'm a West Coast person. Things are a little bit more experimental, bohemian there. And I love and adore being near and on an ocean. So, and it's simply so beautiful.
It really, really is.
It really is. I do. I'm there. I live there, but I am away a lot. But it's. I have four homes in my mind,
wow.
in my heart. Four.
And I hope one of them is Fairfield.
Definitely. Fairfield is one. Italy is one. And India. I have four hubs where I rotate around. But Vancouver is my permanent home.
Well, I wish you bon voyage, and we're sad to see you go, but we hope you come back very, very soon to one of your homes here in Fairfield, Iowa, and Marshy University of Management. We're always, always delighted to have you here. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and sharing all these great secrets of documentary film today. It's been an absolute honor and pleasure.
Thank you, Jessica. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Jagirdev.
Jagirdev.
This is KHOE World Radio here broadcasting from Vedic City at Maharshi University of Management in Fairfield, Iowa.